Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply.
And welcome to episode number 249 of the LSR podcast. My name is Matt Brown, joined each and every week by the brightest minds in all of the gaming industry. With me, I have your friend and mine, Adam Candy. Find him on the Twitter machine at AdamCandy2E's, no Y. If you hate yourself, you can follow me at MattBrownM2. Everything we do, absolutely free, so go ahead, hit that subscribe button. Don't be shy and go in and leave us a rating and a review, unless it's not 4 or 5 stars, and then you can keep it. You can keep it. We don't need it.
Then we're gonna talk, be shy. Yeah. Then yeah, exactly. You need to be very shy. Be bashful. Do not reveal yourself.
Yeah. I mean, listen, it doesn't feel good to leave the 3 anyway, or the 2 or the 1. So just don't do it. It feels good, true, to leave the 4 or 5. So
don't be a podcast Karen. Okay.
Exactly. That's what we're going with here. We're going to talk a little bit about Missouri, talk a little bit about a federal bill out there. But let's start things off with something that's pretty interesting, Adam. And people might remember this from a couple of years ago, that there was an option for Fox to get more involved in the sports betting space. We hadn't really talked about that actually over the last couple of years here, but here we go. This is a pretty big news.
So the news itself is that Lachlan Murdoch, who is essentially the head of Fox Corporation, the son of Rupert Murdoch, was speaking this week and was discussing the fact that Fox has this option to purchase a stake of up to 18.6% of FanDuel. Now, if you want to go back and understand all of the mechanics of this, you can go to LegalSportsReport.com. You can read through the Stars Group acquisition and how it fits in with Flutter and where this all came from initially. But the point of the matter is that Fox has until 2030 to choose to exercise this option. And Murdoch confirmed here in 2024 they do plan to do that sometime within the next 6 years. And you say to yourself, all right, well, what's going to determine whether they choose to do that now or whether they choose to do that 6 years from now? And within the story we have by Matthew Waters at Legal Sports Report, you'll see that there's a key question for FanDuel, I should say, on the Fox side of the FanDuel deal to figure out, which is that when do you want to go to get the maximum discount on what the valuation is on FanDuel, right? And right now, you're still looking at a multi-billion dollar discount for the valuation that they would be able to come in at versus what the overall valuation is of FanDuel. Roughly $35 billion from outside sources is that valuation on FanDuel. And so you would be looking at getting a discount of a couple billion dollars in current day value if Fox were to exercise that option right now. Now, is FanDuel a rocket ship? Will it continue to grow at the rate that it has under the Flutter brand? It's still the U.S. market leader in terms of share, mm-hmm. So certainly could, and there's been no slowing down for that company in the first 6+ years of the legal U.S. sports betting market. Interesting spot for Fox overall, of course, because if you remember, there was the FoxBet app from 2019 to 2023 that everyone thought, with the affiliation it had with the NFL and the availability of that app to be marketed on Sundays, that it would have been more successful than it was. That's another whole issue and a point of contention between Fox and Flutter, because obviously both FanDuel and FoxBet were under the Flutter umbrella. That was settled back in July of 2023, as there was a legal case that was going to have to come to a head in August of 2023, ultimately settled where FoxBet had essentially been saying that Flutter choked it out, right? And that it didn't allow it to succeed. It didn't give it the right support. Essentially, it favored FanDuel over FoxBet. That, of course, has been settled, but this option still hanging out there. And, you know, it is something that I'm sure, absolutely sure, that Flutter has been baking in and preparing for a long time. But it is interesting to get that confirmation from Fox that they plan to exercise the option.
And if you're looking over there, you know, owning an 18.6% stake, would that have to be, you know, then Fox would have to become a gaming operator, quote, coming fully monetized, the option we need to be licensed as a gaming operator, even with only 18.6%. And so we've started that process with state regulators to begin the gaming licensing approval process. And so, Adam, if anyone's wondering if this just seems like, maybe I'll just toss this out there. This will be fun to talk about. Like, I mean, they are saying they are already in the process of getting those gaming licenses that will be needed.
I mean, anything over 5%, right? It leads to the need to be licensed. This is what we've talked about for the longest of times with ESPN Bet. We didn't know if ESPN would try to actually go through this themselves and become an operator, and that would force Disney to go through the licensing process for gaming, which we didn't think they would want to do, and ultimately they decided not to. They went with a branding deal through Penn Entertainment. So for Fox to be willing to do this, they certainly have to see a significant market opportunity when it comes to that stake in FanDuel, and as you see by their message thus far, they certainly see that value.
Let's head over to Missouri, and we knew that there was going to be some ups and downs with all of this, Adam, and so, you know, here's something that I'm sure we are going to, between now and November, touch on quite a bit.
So if you're interested in this story, and if you're in the market in U.S. sports betting, you should be interested in this story, because this could become the only state to legalize online sports betting in 2024, then I would suggest following Pat Evans at Pat Evans on Twitter and keeping up with this story for as closely as he has been following it throughout. So here's the news as we know it this week, as we get, my goodness, I can't even believe how close we are to election day. Boom. We, of course, reported already that the effort to throw it off the ballot was denied. And so now you're looking at online sports betting being on the ballot, and you're seeing the proponents this week go up with their first TV ad. They're going under the name of Winning for Missouri Education. That's, of course, the pro sports teams, and notably DraftKings and FanDuel. They have put $10 million of commitment behind it thus far. On the other side, what we saw this week was the formation of a political action committee, and I want to make sure I get this name right because it is a very technical, specific name. It is Missourians Against the Deceptive Online Gambling Amendment.
Yes, yes, yeah.
We do not know who is behind this exactly. A woman named Catherine Drennan is listed. She owns a company called Midwest Compliance Group out of St. Louis. Similar situation to what we saw with the lawsuit, where we still ultimately don't know who was the impetus behind that lawsuit for the two political consultants that chose to go ahead and file it. So we're waiting to see what contributions come in to that political action committee and whether those are revelatory as to who might be behind it. The industry speculation continues to be that the only entities who would have the reason to want to go against this and the pockets to want to go against this would be land-based casinos, who do not want to see DraftKings and FanDuel come in and be able to have untethered licenses in the state and be able to continue the market dominance that they have held elsewhere. And of course, what is on the ballot is different from what was trying to get through the legislature for the past few years, which did have the requirement to tether to a land-based casino. So we're, of course, going to hear a lot more about this over the next couple of months. Will this opposition be as well-funded as we expect the proponents to be? Remains to be seen. Most recent polling in Missouri suggests that we are moving toward this being a favorite on the ballot, at least in terms of the polling, to say that more than 50% either have a strong favorable or a lean favorable on this ballot measure. Will that be the case? Lots of things can change. Missouri, a state that tends to vote fairly conservatively overall, but with a presidential election on the ballot, that always changes up the math of who's going to be coming out to vote. You get people who don't typically vote in off-year elections coming out in presidential elections, and that makes it a little bit more difficult sometimes to be able to poll and get a reasonable sample on who's going to be out there. But the polling that has been done suggests that it is moving in the right direction for proponents of online sports betting in Missouri.
It is Missourians against the deceptive online gambling, or Matt OGs, if you, for short, if you want to go with that, we can just go with Matt OGs there for future reference here.
Matt OGs sounds like we got like Sugar Hill Gang and Eric B and Rakim to form an opposition group, right? They're the rap OGs and they're mad. They don't like this.
Instead, we're just talking about Missourians that are mad, but it's Matt OGs over here.
Who knew? They are, I guess, you know what? Maybe we're going to find out that Catherine Drennan is a mad OG. I don't know that.
Because we don't know her. Yeah, we don't know for sure. Well, you know what? We will endeavor to try and have that for you next week. We'll figure out if that's
the kind of reporting we do here at Legal Sports Report.
Federal sports betting bill. This is something we have to hit on this once, twice a year. It keeps getting brought up. It keeps, people float things. People say things. So here we are again, end of 2024, Adam, and a new federal sports betting bill out there.
I don't want to blow out our microphones when I do this, but I do feel the need to do this because it's the third time that we've seen Paul Tonko, the representative from New York, file some sort of bill against regulating sports betting. Mm-hmm. Remix! Because that's what we've got. Another remixed version of a bill to regulate sports betting. Now, yeah. Paul Tonko has been very clear in his intentions. He has said all along that the legislation that he has filed has been intended to start a discussion on what would be reasonable regulations for sports betting. Of course, the sports betting industry does not want to be regulated at the federal level, and understandably so in many cases, because it's very difficult to paint with a broad brush this industry that is regulated heavily already at the state level and is dealing with unique concerns in many of those different places where a heavy hand from the federal government is not viewed as welcome. So let me talk to you about what this bill actually is. This is the Safe Bet Act, which is a revamped version of the Safe Bet Act, and it addresses advertising, affordability, and artificial intelligence. Paul Tonko said at the press conference that Jim Gazzali covered for us, "This bill is an effort designed to prevent harm before it occurs. To be clear, we are in no way attempting to ban sports gambling. Our goal is the opposite. The Safe Bet Act will ensure that gambling on sports is safe for the public to enjoy." What's in the bill? The Safe Bet Act would ban college props. We know that that has been something that NCAA President Charlie Baker has been after. According to NCAA statistics, 1 in 3 high-profile athletes receives abusive messages from someone with a betting interest. That is an NCAA statistic. It calls for restrictions on sports betting advertising, limiting ads to times and spaces when children are not likely to be in the audience, and limiting advertising to brand awareness rather than inducing gambling or showing people how to bet. And that, of course, was in the Betting on Our Future Act that Tonko previously introduced. There's also sports betting affordability checks saying that deposit limits, no more than 5 deposits in 24 hours, no more than $1,000 in 24 hours, no more than $10,000 over 30 days. And then, of course, the use of AI is addressed as well. Unsurprisingly, Matt, pushback very swift, beginning with Representative Dita Titus from Nevada, who co-chairs the Federal Gaming Caucus. She said, "While the Safe Bet Act is perhaps well-intentioned, preempting state gaming regulators by outlawing most forms of advertising and restricting the types and methods by which customers can place bets is a misguided approach. The American Gaming Association, as well as online trade group Idea Growth, have put out statements against the bill as well." Tonko is co-sponsoring this with Senator Richard Blumenthal, and if that name sounds familiar to those of you listening to the podcast, Richard Blumenthal is also someone who has dug into college partnerships with sports betting entities over the last couple of years and has also asked companies to explain more about what they're doing to encourage responsible gambling. So you have two sponsors who are not particularly surprising in introducing this bill. Now, it is currently Friday, September 13th, as we introduce this to you on the podcast. If that's when it's going into Congress, you can feel pretty safe that nothing is happening on this prior to the election. Nothing much is going to happen in Congress at all prior to the election at this point. So it is not something we expect to see any immediate attention. We have no idea if it'll actually gain any real traction. But you certainly know that the sports betting industry will be watching and likely pushing hard against any form of federal regulation in the wake of the fall of PASPA.
You know, Adam, we look at some of this stuff, and like some of this stuff is things that you and I have touched on the podcast over the years, certainly stuff that we're saying like, hey, there's merit to some of the things, and certainly there's probably a middle ground between everything. I mean, you know, you and I said, is there really a need for college props? If there is, then like, can't we just put a hard cap on the limit? Pretty low, right? And then we don't have to worry about nonsense and things like that. Like, I think there's a happy medium there. You don't have to ban it. Just put a limit on it that doesn't really affect things out there. We've talked about the deposit stuff and like kind of the loopholes that make this super tricky, right? I mean, like, no more than 5 deposits in 24 hours. What if it's $5, $10 deposit? You know, so there's all kinds of things that kind of go on with all of this where it's like, there's something to be had here somewhere along the way. The legislators are going to work with the books, and there'll probably be a framework at some point in the next couple of years where everybody adopts kind of their own policy here as opposed to needing a federal bill with all that, Adam. But, you know, again, there's just, you can kind of poke holes into all of this stuff because, you know, no more than $1,000 deposited in 24 hours. Well, for me and you, maybe that's a good idea. But for some hedge fund manager who makes $1,000 a minute, like, it doesn't matter. You know, so there's just all kinds of things that go into all this that it doesn't, you can't just put it all and lump it into one thing, right? Like, so it's, there's merit to some, like, there's starting points here, right? Like, they're talking points, I think, to get things going. But you can't just go like, oh, yeah, here's what we're going to do.
No, you simply can't. And that wouldn't be a wise approach from either side, right? It wouldn't be a wise approach to pretend that this isn't a discussion that can be had. There's absolutely room to talk about this, to come hard from one side and say, no, we don't need to do anything different, or to come hard from the other side and say, here are your rules from the federal government. I don't think most reasonable people within this discussion would say that's the best way to go about things, right? I don't think anyone would say that what has happened to some college athletes in terms of the attempts to influence and what has happened with the Jontay Porter situation is okay. And there are lots of things that have happened that I think plenty of people would say, this isn't okay, and we need to talk about better ways to, whether it's self-regulate, whether it's house rules, whatever the case might be. But I think what the industry is saying with one very clear, loud voice is that a set of one-size-fits-all regulations coming from the federal government is not going to help anyone at all. It's not the right approach. It's going to stifle the market with ways that are unintended, right? And I think that's what Dina Titus was essentially saying. Is like, look, I get where you're coming from. Mm-hmm. You've seen a lot of scandals this year. Let's be clear that some of those had to do with offshore gaming, right, and bookies and things that have nothing to do with the regulated market, but perception being reality, you can understand how legislators would react. That being said, there is a way to go about this that I think involves the industry choosing some self-regulation in some ways. And we've seen the responsible online gaming association, I might have gotten the name wrong there, the collective of online gaming operators who formed this year and talked about the fact that they're talking about best practices at their own level, right? They're reviewing the situations that have happened, because the one thing that you and I, Matt, try to make clear over and over and over again is that it's not like sportsbooks want these things to happen either.
Right.
They need people to trust in the games. They need people to leave athletes alone to be able to run a successful, yes, profitable business that keeps regulators off their back, right? And that, yes, they have their own responsibility in that, but the responsibility for that goes far beyond what they do and far beyond the scope of what they can regulate themselves. However, the answer is not, in their view, and understandably so, to have one big set of regulations dropped onto them.
Yeah, it's the deal, like you just said. You said it so perfectly. It's like the books, deep down, what we want too, right? I mean, it's the one of those things, like, bad optics are just not good for anybody, right? And so it is one of those things where I think people look at this and be like, see, the books are always doing all this stuff. And it's like, yeah, I mean, you know, they kind of want the same thing we do because they need to keep people interested and they need to keep business flowing in and out of there. Adam, well, I'll close things down here with a them's the breaks. And I'm glad that you said house rules and things like that. Just your quick reminder out there, guys, as South Alabama beat Northwestern State last night in football 87-10. and the two football coaches got together at the start of the fourth quarter and said, hey, this is out of hand. Why don't we just cut the time in half and let's just play a 6-minute quarter as opposed to a 12-minute quarter. They shake hands. They agree on it. Everything's fine and dandy, right, Adam? Well, except you have to play 55 minutes in a game in order for your bets to get home at most sportsbooks out there. So despite the fact that this 36.5 point spread was being covered by 77 points at the time, 55 minutes of the game did not actually get played, and so therefore those bets get voided. Now, the overs all hit, obviously, and most of those books honor those because you can't take points off the board. So that was already unconditionally settled. But, you know, listen, if we're being fair, Adam, yes, was the 77 going to get cut to 35 in this thing? No, but you can't just assume anything. You can't whatever. And so had this gone the other way, people would be screaming that they should have done it as well. And so here it is. It's the read the rules, understand the rules, and don't complain about the rules because them's the rules.
I mean, we talk so much, Matt, and we say it repeatedly. Know your house rules. And it sounds cliche, right? Like, oh, there's your little throwaway. Know your house rules, right? That's how these things get determined, right? Yeah. Like, you agree to those house rules when you choose to place your bet with that house. They have to post them, they have to make them clear, and they have to follow them. And if they don't follow them, then state regulators can get involved, and they have, over this last 6.5 years, gotten involved when sportsbooks have not honored the house rules that are posted. That is why the legal regulated gaming market exists in some way. And Matt, just for those who are wondering about, you know, oh, are they going to talk about the discussion of Massachusetts trying to, you know, talk to sports books and limiting bettors and so on like that? We are. We need a little more time to get into that discussion than we have for this week in particular. So if you're looking at it and saying, I'd love to hear them talk about that, well, just exercise a little patience. There are lots of podcasts out there. Maybe go listen to one of those podcasts until we come back at you with a little more time to discuss that in the following week.
Yes, it's just it's an interesting thing that we just continue. Like, little quirks will happen throughout the course of this industry. And like, you know, the two coaches decided to play 6 minutes instead of 12. And like, you know, it's just, you never know. It's like a thing you don't even think about, Adam, right? It's like, you don't even think about this being a thing that could possibly happen. And it's like, oh, that actually affects the betting markets. And so just kind of one of those things to throw out there. Unfortunate for those that did have South Alabama.
Well, and I've talked about this, my friends who are, you know, college basketball referees, and how it came out before the NCAA tournament a couple of years ago that it's not just reviewing last-second shots if they're going to affect the outcome of the game. You are now required to review every last-second shot. It could be 87-10 in a basketball game. And if someone shoots a three at the buzzer, you've got to go look at that and review it on the monitor because they're aware of the fact that gambling is involved. And so you also want to say the NCAA might want to make its officials aware that you might be affecting some other things here if you allow that game to be shortened.
Guys, everything we do here, absolutely free. So do appreciate the support. Go ahead, subscribe, rate, review. We do appreciate all that type of stuff. Head over to LegalSportsReport.com if you want the full written breakdowns on all the stuff we talk about here on the podcast, plus much, much, much more over there from Adam and team. So please go ahead, take in all the great words and all the great work that Adam and team are doing. They go read the stuff. They go listen to the stuff. They go do summaries of the stuff so that you don't have to. For Adam, I am Matt. Talk to you guys next week.